Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
Oh, yeah, you know what day it is. You know what day it is. Hallelujah. All right, that's, I swear to God, we're not, thank you. Thank you, Andrew. We're not doing that, Andrew Holland. We're not doing that anymore. I'll just do it one more time. Just, okay, that's all I needed. It is Alek Manoah Day in the Bronx. Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, signed it today, and
Everybody gets a day off.
Everybody gets a day off. It's Alek Manoah Day. Pray down the canyon of heroes. All kidding aside, Mr. Barker.
There's kidding?
All kidding aside.
Okay.
You do know that Alek Manoah is starting for the Blue Jays.
I haven't heard.
Tonight.
Is he really?
The Blue Jays, you may have noticed, won yesterday without Alek Manoah.
I heard that.
Indeed. And Steven Matz, 10 strikeouts, no walks. We got a lot of time to talk about that. We got a lot of time to talk about the Jays stealing stuff from the Rays.
Yeah, of course they are.
Because Barker's answer when we talked about this was so funny. But it is walk-off Wednesday, so your calls, your texts, 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. 590-590 is the text line. Name and originating location, please. You can lie about it. Let's just face it. Everybody does. Put a fake name and a fake location on it. Yeah, it's like, there's no response. It's the same thing with Twitter. It's just, it's all fake.
Is it?
Anyhow, but if you do, if we like your comment, your phone call so much, we'll let you walk us off.
Well, it's mainly about you, if you like it.
No, it's really the guys. It's our crack staff in the back. We've got a staff of 9 people in the back, and they vote.
Needs nine people.
We've got our two. No, that's Tim and friends. We got two researchers back there, and so we're all good to go. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Here's how we're going to get the conversation started. We'll talk about last night later on. Last night doesn't matter because Alek Manoah is starting tonight. I think, Kevin Barker, there is more pressure on Alek Manoah making this start than there was on Nate Pearson when
let me ask you a question.
Let me roll with this for a minute, because remember what happened when I rolled with Derek Fisher. So just let me roll with this for a minute here. Let me roll for just a second. There is more pressure on him because if Alek Manoah craps the bed or kind of does a Nate Pearson 2 1/3, ain't nobody else. Like when Nate Pearson was out earlier this year and it wasn't going well, we kind of shrugged and said, well, okay, but there's Alek Manoah. Mm-hmm. And now if Alek Manoah doesn't go, we're like, well, Simeon Woods Richardson, where are you? Yeah. I think there's a lot of pressure on Alek Manoah tonight. I'm not saying he's not up to it, because I have... This is the right decision. Let's find out. Yankee Stadium isn't going to be full. It's not the animal house that it is when it's full. Quite frankly, I'm not certain Alek Manoah gives a rat's ass about whether he's pitching in Mars, the Moon, or Yankee Stadium.
You're talking about. He doesn't care about the organization and what that pressure being on him and Nate Pearson. You think he cares? You think any player cares that, well, what other people think about the organization? Now, the organization cares, because I'm with you. Like, you might make it a little easier for him to trade one of the two.
Do you think?
Yeah, I said it.
Yeah, come on. Trade Nate Pearson already?
Wanting to put him in the bullpen. He's had 5 starts in the big league.
What am I going to do? Wait until he's 35 to make a major league start where he goes more than 2 innings? Go ahead and do that.
Give him a chance.
Give him a chance.
He had 5 starts. Let me say that. He had 5 starts. I'm with you. But I don't think he cares. I have heard him talk. Now, I have no idea what you're expecting from him.
Is this
pitching,
panic?
Pitching-wise? Panic what?
Joe Panic. No, is this panic starting Alec Manoa?
Who else you got?
Well, no, but let's, okay.
The bullpen? You see the bullpen?
Let's just, boy, I've seen the bullpen. But let's.
You want to see Trent Thornton pitch?
Stop it.
Because that's who would pitch.
Okay.
Well, I answered your question.
No. Hang on now. Wouldn't you rather go with Hatch?
No.
Okay.
He went from, Alec Manoa went from Vancouver to AAA.
Yeah, without a year.
So what? Who does that?
But he didn't compete against anybody.
What difference is that? Well, there's even more reason to not move him from Vancouver to AAA. Mm-hmm. There is AA. Mm-hmm. Like, he did make some big jumps there that they think very highly of him, or they're not wanting to waste bullets. Why let him strike out 10 people in a AAA start when maybe he could strike out 4 people and give you 4 2/3 at the big league level? I'm not saying that's what he'll do tonight, but you'd rather see him doing it at the big league level if he could do that and giving up 2 runs than doing it in the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He has tremendous mound presence. Other than that, do you really know what he's got?
No.
I know he throws mid-90s,
I know what people are saying. I know what people are talking about.
How would they know?
He's a big-ass human being. I get all that.
He's a giant human.
He's a giant,
6'6", 260. He's a big man.
Massive.
But he throws hard. That's about all you know. Yeah. Is his slider any good? Huh? Can he throw his changeup behind an account? Can he get back an account with a slider? Can he put you away with a slider? What's his two strike pitch? Can he elevate a heater? Can he pitch to both sides of the plate? Is he more vertical? Is it max effort? Does he have good mechanics? Any idea of any of that?
Do you read anything into the fact that he was able to have some success against decent Yankees lineups in spring training? I know what the answer is. Forget it. Just slap me in. Stop it. Stop slapping me.
I can't believe you actually
That's
did that to yourself.
That's a stupid, dumbass question.
That was not a good one.
For which I heartily apologize. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590, 590 is the text line. Terry and Vaughn, Jeff, you're doing him a disservice by hyping him up too much. If he sucks in MLB this year, it's your fault.
We blame you for everything.
Oh, why not?
Hear, hear to that.
Just wanted to ask Blair what he thinks of Corey Kluber now, because I recall him and Stephen Brunn after his first appearance versus the Jays saying that he looked washed up, then throws a no-hitter. Jeff and Kokomo, first of all, BS, you're from Kokomo. Secondly, nobody, you spelt the name Jeff, G-E-O-F-F. Like, come on. That's not the real Jeff spelling.
Oh, that's how I spell it.
Nah. Yeah. That's people like Sir Joffrey
out of the text that you
Sir
just read,
Joffrey
the only thing
Chaucer.
You got from that is how he spelt your name.
Yeah.
That's it.
Because Corey Kluber is washed up. I don't care. Threw a no-hitter. Who hasn't thrown a no-hitter, for God's sake?
Nobody for the Blue Jays.
Not yet. You got to go. Got to go 9 innings to throw a no-hitter. That ain't happening in this team. Anyhow, he is washed up. Relax.
Washed up strong.
Okay, he's not as good as he used to be. He's capable of throwing a no-hitter. But I like starting. I'll read the bad stuff. Is Barker going to make picks for the Euro this year? Yes,
no,
he is. We
he
are
is
having
not.
Barker's Euro picks
again. I'm bigger than you.
416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590, 590 is a text line. It's right here in your contract.
It is not.
It is.
You don't have my contract.
I do indeed. Hey, Eddie in Fort Erie, what's up, man?
Oh, hey, guys, what's up?
Hey.
Don't sound so excited. Jesus, man. How are you?
I was good. I was kind of caught off guard a little bit. But can you do me a favor?
No.
Not only can you do picks for Euro, can you throw in some Copa America as well for me?
Oh, I like that, Copa America. Say that again.
Copa America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Although it's more fun here in Barker's try to pronounce Moldova and places like that and kind of come out Moldavia. I mean, Copa America, Brazil, Argentina. Like, what country in Copa America could Barker screw up?
Okay, Eddie, what you got about the baseball team? Here we go.
I was thinking about your question, Jeff, about the pressure on Manoah starting tonight. I think it is because it's not like he's facing Gerrit Cole tonight. Because mm-hmm. I felt like when Pearson was pitching against Scherzer in his first start, I think he was trying to do a little too much, being like, I want to match pitch for pitch with Max Scherzer. Mm. I don't think Manoah has to do that tonight because it's not like Domingo Germán's going to win 20 games, right? You can just do your thing and locate pitch after pitch on your fastball command tonight and then, just do your thing, just like what Steven Matz did, you know? And mm-hmm. if you do that, you're going to do really good. And you know what? If he does well, good. And you know what? I'm going to be watching tonight. I can't wait. It's going to be great.
Thanks, Eddie. Look, all kidding aside, I mean, this is a guy, Shai Davidi wrote a really good article on this guy. You know, this isn't a kid who was destined for greatness from the start. It's a guy who was undrafted in high school, didn't have a tremendous amount of scholarship offers, and used I believe Arden Zwelling was something in this last year. Arden or Ben, forgive me if I got the two of you mixed up, but I think he used the pitching ninja system as well. This is kind of a self-made pitcher. And I think for that reason, his road here was different than Nate Pearson's road. And you're going to go, well, he was a first-round draft pick. There were a lot of expectations. Yeah, but it's not like he was predestined. Like, Nate Pearson was kind of predestined. You know, his family basically turned Nate Pearson into a corporation. Mm. You know, they spent a lot of money, and I'm not criticizing, they spent a lot of money and a lot of time getting him to the point where he could go to the major leagues.
Yeah, well, he did throw 35 innings in the minor leagues. Did he earn it? Look, when I played, you had to earn it. I'm not sure 35 innings is what this is doing. Again, he had three good starts in AAA. Okay, mm-hmm. I'll give you that. Tip my hat to you. But again, it's the only reason that they really have the minor leagues when it comes to development is they want you to fail at that level so you know how to do it and you can correct it quicker.
Yeah.
You have any idea how to do that? Say mechanically tonight in the first inning, he's not locating a heater or somewhat throwing it where he wants to throw it. And I don't think he's a location guy. I think he tries to muscle his way through some starts, which is okay. 6'6". Mm-hmm. If you can do it, do it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Yankees, right? The Yankees have a little trouble with velocity. We saw that one last night with Matz. You know, he started throwing that sinker, which is what I've been telling everybody that he needs to do. Hey, he doesn't listen to me, right? But it is, you're facing a team that doesn't like the velocity as much as other teams do. You start throwing a little bit more of it. If he doesn't have it tonight early,
right?
Does he have any idea? Not Petey. I guess Petey's watched enough video of him, and has he seen him enough? No. But he's watching enough video to know that, you know, if he's flying open, how does he correct it? How does he – can he use a breaking ball to get his fastball location back? This is the reason why people wanted or organizations want a little bit more than 35 innings. And I get it back to it. Has he earned the right to be called up? He's had three good starts.
Yep.
Well, I had to hit a bunch of homers in the minor leagues to get called up to the big leagues. A bunch. Okay. That's the point here,
I'm with you.
I'm with you, and wasting the bullet thing is a big deal now.
Yes.
Why throw 95 and strike out 10 guys when he could do somewhat of that at the big league level? I understand
and
that.
And again, I'm also going to say this:
if he has three okay innings, what do you do with it?
That's the flip side. That's the flip side here.
Yeah, and it could happen. If he throws a cement mix and slider and Aaron Judge hits a two-run homer in the first inning, that little short porch in right field, how's he handling that?
But
this
is why I said that, and I understand that he's not going to go out in the field and go, ooh, I better do well because Nate Pearson didn't do well. I get all that. But I'm saying for folks, for fans, there's a lot at stake here. If he doesn't pitch well, what people are going to start.
Well, yeah, and it's like you've got to be careful with the hype when you're in an organization.
But
what's your thought process
of
Nate Pearson?
No. I'll tell you what. I think the organization managed the hype with Manoah better than they managed it with Pearson. Now, let me finish. Maybe a lot of that is because, you know, reporters aren't around the team in the on a day-to-day basis. The pandemic's helped.
Sure.
I think the hype with Manoah has been mostly generated from what we saw in spring training and from what people have digested on, you know, using the minor league baseball app. And
I'll throw this at you.
Yes, sir.
I'll throw this at you.
Yes, sir.
He goes out and has five scoreless innings and punches out four. Would you be surprised? Yes or no answer?
Yes.
If he goes out and pitches three and a third and gives up four runs and strikes out one guy, would you be surprised?
Yes. I think you're going to.
Holy moly,
no,
really?
I think you're going to see what I'm saying. I think I'm hoping.
I'm with you. I'm hoping too. But would you be surprised is the question.
Yeah, I kind of think you're going to see 4 2/3, some strikeouts, some hits, maybe a couple of runs. I'm hoping it goes out and shoves that
me
up
too.
To you know
me
what.
Too. Yeah, I'm with you.
And I'd love to see him standing out there in the sixth inning at Yankee Stadium.
Forget about the organization. But, for the kids' sake, you hope that.
All I want is for your first outing. But I do this with every pitcher. Just get through the game healthy. And I understand people, it's not a matter of having low expectations. Get through the game healthy. Give me a chance to win. Look like you belong and look like you deserve to go out there the second time.
We know what Jeff Blair is going to say if he goes 3 1/3. Put him in the bullpen.
No. Not with this. Not with this.
Not with this guy.
Not with
Why
this guy.
Why is this guy different than Nate Pearson?
Not with this guy. Because so far this guy, the issue I have with Nate Pearson is health. This guy so far has been healthy.
And he has dominated the places he's been in the minor leagues. Yeah. I give you that.
And he's put innings up.
When 35 innings.
So, no, but I mean in games.
Sure.
So, that's kind of where I am with him.
Okay.
I want a good start.
I do too.
That's all I want. I want a good start. I want a start that makes me think, oh, okay, pencil you in for the next.
I want him to look like he's been there and done it before.
I don't know about that. But, how do you judge that?
Nate Pearson looked like he'd been there and done it before?
No.
Okay, there's how you judge it.
No. But we've seen other guys who, I find that hard to quantify. Look like you've been there and done it before.
The first thing out of your mouth when you talk about Alec is mound presence. What he looks like when he walks around the mound and he has the ball in his hand or he's receiving the ball. That's the first thing I'm going to look at. Is how he presents himself.
Yeah.
I'm a giant. You have no chance. No? Because that's how everybody talks about it.
Very quickly, his voice, where did that come from? Very quickly, let's go to Pat in Paris, Ontario. You want to take us in a different direction, Pat? And I'm okay with that. Go ahead.
Yeah, just thanks for taking the call. I for years now with this strike box on the television, it's just been driving me crazy.
Oh, my friend. Thank you.
I'm curious, does Major League Baseball and Major League Baseball's umpires, do they study the results of these to try and improve their calling and make the game better? Because if they're not, just get rid of the damn thing because I'm ready to pull my hair out.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Listen, thanks for the call, man. You're talking to the converter.
Yeah.
First of all, there are ways of grading umpires. They've got technology. They track them and all that stuff. I have no problem with that. Well, I would like to think that umpires go and look at it. As a viewer, and this is going to get me in trouble with people here at this place. As a viewer, I've seen enough baseball. I do not need the strike box. I'm sorry. The only strike zone I'm worried about is what the dude behind the plate is calling day.
Tell me what the point of it is.
It creates discussion. It creates discussion. There's nothing wrong with that. It is a visual aid. I will give them that. But again, it's irrelevant. You know when I know the umpire has a crap strike zone is when guys are yapping at him,
sure.
and when managers are being thrown out. Otherwise,
you know why they yap a lot, right? Is because If a hitter takes a pitch that's not in that box, well, he don't think it's in the box. He turns around and looks at the manager. The manager turns around and looks at the bench coach. The bench coach gets on the phone and says, hey, where was that around the box? Was it in the box or out of the box?
See, I just
that's
don't.
That's the point.
Right? I don't need it. I'm a smart enough baseball fan that I can watch a game and judge it in my own. And, again, it's irrelevant. Ultimately, it's irrelevant to how the game is played because it doesn't matter. The guy's calling a strike that's 6 inches outside the box all day long. It doesn't matter what the box says. Mm. It really doesn't.
He's still calling it.
It's the worst
thing that's ever happened to an umpire, I think, is the box.
Again, I understand the reason for it is a visual aid. I just don't think – I know I don't need it. And, yeah, I get why people do it. I think it's probably good.
Conversational piece.
And it's probably good for, casual fans. It's not even casual fans. It drives nuts because I know they watch it and go, the hell's that thing there for if nobody's using it?
Yeah.
So that is a good question. It's a great question. I would just assume that the strike zone box be turfed, to be quite honest.
It ain't going to happen.
It'll never happen.
No.
It'll never happen. And we're also, this point,
you know why it's not going to happen?
We're also going to an electronic strike zone. That's going to happen in the next 4 years.
If it's got us talking.
Yeah.
Other people are talking.
John Flaherty is the Yankees analyst on the YES Network. The Yankees will take on Alek Manoah and the Blue Jays today. John Flaherty joins us next. This is Baseball Central. All right, game two of the Yankees-Jays series goes tonight from the Bronx. You may have heard Alek Manoah is pitching for the Toronto Blue Jays tonight. The Jays got a terrific outing from Steven Matz last night.
Best of the year for him?
Yeah. Yeah, and everything everybody has said about Steven Matz when they worry about Steven Matz, none of that happened last night. And as you mentioned, he threw a sinker.
Yeah, he did. He was very confident. He threw everything with conviction.
Yeah, he looked very comfortable.
Put it down and throw it.
John Flaherty is a New York Yankees analyst and the YES Network, former Major League catcher. We know him as Flash. John, thanks so much for joining us, man. Trust everything's going well?
Everything's going really well, guys. Nice to spend a few minutes with you.
All right. I know Barker wants to ask you a lot of questions about catching young pitchers and all that, but I wanted to ask you about the Yankees, and leaving aside the Yankees pitching for a minute, something that I've wondered about as I watch this team play, and you certainly see them more than we do. You know, I see flashes of what this lineup can do, and bearing in mind that Giancarlo Stanton wasn't in there last night. But John, have you seen the best this lineup can be?
I don't think there's any way that we've seen anything close to the best that it's going to be. If this is as good as it's going to get, then they're really not going to get to where they expect to be. I mean, if you look up and down this lineup, you know, Aaron Judge is swinging the bat great right now. Gleyber Torres is swinging the bat well. Clint Frazier had 5 hits in his last 2 games, so that's encouraging for him. But there are so many guys like Luke Voit who came off the IL, and he hasn't really found his traction yet. Gary Sanchez has been very disappointing again. You know, Brett Gardner now is in center field, and Aaron Hicks is hurt. I mean, you can go up and down the whole lineup, and, I think you nailed it. They show you flashes of it that they're going to get going, and then a night like last night where you give Matz a lot of credit, but, they got shut down again. So they're looking for that little run offensively where they can carry this pitching staff because it's been the other way around. The pitching has definitely carried the lineup.
Okay, you've been around some great pitchers. Where does Gerrit Cole rank with those pitchers?
Wow. You know what, Kevin, it's so hard for us because we haven't been able with last year with COVID and this year, you know, not having access to the clubhouse and not being able to travel with the team. We're doing everything remotely from the stadium. So I haven't gotten to know Gerrit personally. Mm-hmm. But when you watch him out on the mound, he's as advertised. And when you watch him in the dugout, dealing with his teammates and especially his pitching staff, it's another level. I've caught so many great pitchers who they wanted to be the man once every fifth day, and a lot of times they were, but they didn't want the responsibilities that go with being the leader of a pitching staff the other 4 days. And when I watch Garrett, I listen to him after and before games, the way he talks. This guy is the total package. I mean, the stuff out on the mound is dominating. We all know that. But he's gotten this pitching staff. He's taken them to another level. They're all throwing their changeups more than they ever had in their career. I think that's following Garrett's lead. The work that he does in between starts, he reminds me of Andy Pettit, kind of how much work he puts into it. And if you're a starter on that staff, bullpen or rotation, and you don't follow that, then that's your own fault. So Yankees couldn't be happier with their signing on the field and off it.
Okay, this may be a little bit of an unfair question, but I think if anybody can answer it, it would be you. With Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, he's gotten off to a super hot start. It's a bit of a small sample size, right? But you can see what the ceiling could end up being. I got to ask you, if you're catching and you're trying to get a pitcher through some at-bats with him, how do you throw him? How do you get him out, do you think?
Well, first of all, he's the one conversation you have before a game that he's not going to beat us in a big spot. And, you know, obviously at the 2-run home run last night, I wouldn't constitute that as a big spot. But in a game like last night, the first game of a 3-game series, he comes in here red hot. And any young hitter, any big dude, and I know he's lost a lot of weight, but he's still a big guy. Yeah. I'd have to make him think about the ball inside. I'd have to make him think about the ball off the plate inside. Because if he's as comfortable as he looked last night with that little cutter out over the plate and drilling it the other way, you're going to have a long 3 days. And sometimes you got to establish something in the first, second, third at bat of the first game that says we're just not going to let you dominate these 3 days. So all of that being said, it's a lot easier when you talk about it in the pitcher-catcher meeting and he steps up for the plate and you have to execute it. But I always try to eliminate the big boy in the lineup the first game of the series and send a little message that you're going to have to cover the whole plate against us for the next couple of days because we're just not going to lay the ball out over the plate and let you drill it the other way.
John, you know, Alek Manoah is going to make his first major league start tonight at Yankee Stadium. You know, and I made the point that I've covered enough games at Yankee Stadium, even with limited capacity, there's still something about that place. What would you say to a young pitcher making his debut at that stadium? Never mind how the Yankees are playing at that time. Well, because it's one thing to say, hey, just pretend it's another ballpark, it's another mound, you've been in them before. It's Yankee Stadium. And if you look around, you see all the stuff there, you know it's a big deal.
Yeah. I've done it before, especially with Tampa Bay when we had such young pitchers. And, you know, these kids go into Yankee Stadium, and obviously the Yankees are enough to handle as a ball club, but the stadium and the fans, there's a lot there. And to tell you the truth, I never tried to make it bigger than it was before the game. I would never have conversations like, hey, block out the crowd, you know, all of those things. The big leagues is the big leagues no matter what stadium you're playing in. Obviously, Yankee Stadium's a little bit different. But I think the most important thing is the warm-up in the bullpen and making sure you got a kid who's confident and feels comfortable. That walk from the bullpen to the dugout might be the most important conversation you can have, trying to keep him focused and relaxed on the game plan and what he's trying to do. Because when you walk from that bullpen now all of a sudden to the dugout and you see the enormity of a big league stadium and you know, Yankee Stadium, obviously, with its aura is a little bit greater. It's really important to keep a young kid focused on that walk so that when he gets to the dugout and he gets out on the mound, you hope that he gets to that feeling, and Kevin and I went through this, where, okay, it's just another baseball game. You know, it takes a little while for that to happen, but you hope he does it sooner rather than later. And, you know, without being said, the first inning is so important for a young pitcher.
Okay, when Aroldis Chapman is done being a Yankee, what would the conversation be with you and whoever you're talking to on a pre- and post-game show when he comes to ranking or New York Yankees pitchers?
We haven't gotten there yet, thank goodness, because I'm terrible at ranking all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously, Mo and I, you know, I was there for 3 years, and you know, there's just nobody sure ever going to be in that conversation. But you know, I have a lot of respect for Aroldis. I think, first of all, the ability to go out there and physically keep himself on top of his game, how hard he works. I mean, this isn't a guy who's just out there chucking at 100 miles an hour and hoping for the best. I mean, he's a physical specimen who has kept himself in great shape. He doesn't rely on velocity, anymore. And that's, sounds strange to say because he throws 100 and over 100. But, he's developed a really good slider that's gotten better since he's been a Yankee. He's developed a split finger now that he can show as a third pitch. And I guess my point is he keeps getting better. He doesn't just sit there and say, this is the way I'm going to throw it by you, kind of like a Goose Gossage. And, if you get me, great. If I get you, great. He's figuring out a way to pitch a little bit with well above average stuff. And the attitude that he brings, and people ask me all the time, he's given up some big home runs in postseasons that have ended seasons. And, yeah, he has. But, Kevin, the great closers that we've ever been around, that's done. That's forgotten, as soon as it happens, and they look forward to the next outing. And Aroldis has done that fantastically as a Yankee. So he'll be in that conversation. I'm glad I don't have to rank him right now.
Yeah. Do you think Gleyber Torres that we're seeing now offensively, do you think this is here to stay?
Yeah. The first month was just kind of a blip on the radar. And last year, with COVID, he wasn't great either. He got hot at the end. He got hot in the postseason, but to be quite honest with you, he looked really comfortable at second base as a young player, and the transition over to shortstop and taking over for Didi, and everybody said, oh, well, he came up as a shortstop, it shouldn't be a problem. Well, it's the toughest position. Maybe, I'm going to be a little biased here, behind the guy behind the plate playing shortstop at the major league level. And it's not making the great plays. It's making the routine play every day that when your pitcher executes a pitch, you have to know that it's going to be an out. So Gleyber at the beginning of this year struggled in the field. I think that led to some struggles at the plate. It took him a while to hit that first home run, and we all know once you get that one out of the way, there's a little sigh of relief. So Glaber's too good of a hitter. We're starting to see it lately. He didn't do anything last night, but he's in a pretty good place, both offensively and defensively right now.
Flash, really good of you to do this, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad we're able to catch up. Enjoy the game tonight, guys. All right?
Absolutely. Take care. It's John Flaherty of the Yes Network.
Yeah, if you haven't watched a pre- and post-game show with him on it, you're going to learn stuff.
Yeah, it's he and Jack Curry are terrific.
It's tremendous stuff.
That is interesting, hearing him talk about that, how important that walk from the bullpen to the mound is. It's a pitching coach, it's the catcher, and it's that day's starter.
I will say the hardest thing I had to get past was how big – everything was at the big league level. You go from anywhere in the minor leagues is nowhere near as big as everything is, and it's even bigger in Yankee Stadium. And that's the one thing, when you're walking out of there and going to where it matters, that's one little thing. You work on your breathing and work on what you have to do and think about down and away.
Yeah, the one thing about Yankee Stadium and I can remember the Yankee Stadium before this one, there are two stadiums where I've gone out and I thought, holy cow, this is massive. One, I snuck onto the Rose Bowl one night at about 5 in the morning with actually FP Santangelo and PJ Loyola were part of this. That place is massive.
Mm-hmm.
But not as massive as the previous Yankee Stadium. Yeah, it just seemed to go. And the one, I swear to God, the one that always stood out is Shea Stadium. Because Shea Stadium was like that horseshoe. The first time you went out at Shea Stadium, you stood there and went, Jesus God, this is huge. I mean, it just keeps going and going and going. The new Yankee Stadium's kind of sort of like that.
Yeah.
But it is, it's a big deal. There's the subway. There's the trains going by, the elevated train. There's a buzz. There's a buzz around a game at Yankee Stadium.
And it's the Yankees.
And it's the Yankees.
Yeah.
You got pinstripes, man.
Get past that again. That's what I'm saying. Have Petey just tell you, keep saying it, down and away.
Mm.
Think about down and away, and then you start locating that, and you can expand to everything else. Hopefully he's fine.
590-590 is a text line, 416-870-0590, *591-888-666-0590. It's walk-off Wednesday. We'll give you a chance to step up to the plate when we come back. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Four
416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590, 590.
David in Toronto, thank you for your patience, my friend. Welcome to Walk Off Wednesday.
Hey, now, how's it going, boys?
Going well, I think.
Well, you know what, Jeff? I miss seeing you at the Scotiabank Arena. I'm a part-time usher there.
Yeah.
I had nice chats with you over there, but
yeah.
You guys aren't there anymore.
Unless
you're hiding under the tarps or something that we don't know about.
I've been known to hide in a lot of places, but not there. Hopefully, we'll be back at some point before 2027. That's my
I don't want to waste time for everybody.
Go ahead, David.
I'm a big Nate Pearson fan. Love his frame, love his delivery. I think the kid has the tools. Injuries aside, I'm more worried it's a mental thing, and maybe it isn't. I know he's pitched in the playoffs last year. I watched his progression through the minors, but is he overcompensating? Does he get the jitters? Does he have the yips? That's my concern with Pearson. My second question is, where's Captain Brazil and Mr. Pardeño?
I will answer that question. I'll let Barker answer the first part. He's coming off Tommy John surgery. Now, the last I heard, he's not pitching in the minors yet. Somebody with the organization can give us further info on it. But, you know, he's the guy they signed out of Brazil. What was it, $1.4 million at the age of 15? He's now, he's now 20. My understanding is he's in the final stages of rehab from TJ and is supposed to be pitching someplace this year. That's the best that I got. Bark, you want the first part?
Yeah, look, the mental part of it's very hard to come on and have a conversation about what a guy's thinking mentally and mound presence. I think he chases velocity a lot. And when you're a young guy and everybody's been telling you that, you know, you can be the first guy to throw 106 miles an hour, well, when you're not throwing it that hard, then you start trying to throw it that hard. And what happens usually is you don't throw it where you want to throw it. And then, secondary pitch, does he really have one? Like, you know, he's flirting around with a breaking ball and a slider and a changeup. And you know, if the velocity's not there, I think that's one of the things. Could that be, you know, linked to his mental part of the game? Probably. You know, he hasn't had a lot of success at the big league level. It's gonna play a little bit with your mindset. And that's something he has to get through. But I just think it has more to do with chasing the velocity part of it than it does the mental, you know, I haven't had success and that kind of thing. If he just gets past that and starts thinking about more of location of, it's okay to locate 96, 97 and not overthrow and try and get to 101. How's that?
Yeah. Thanks, David. Thanks for the call. Yeah. No, I think that's, and we talk about the velocity. See, I'm not going to second guess you in that. I look at it a little differently, though.
Yeah.
I think when Nate Pearson's up here, he's got to show me 100 and 101.
Well, maybe he will.
I'm not saying sit. I need to see it.
Maybe can.
To me, when you see him, because think back to that game. Think again. I know that game against Tampa was basically over the playoff game.
Yeah.
But we saw a couple of those. And that, to me, indicates he's completely comfortable. I'm not saying I want seven in a row. Flash it, though. You got it? Flash it.
Yeah, I don't know what the point is.
Yeah.
I'd rather him be pitching at 98, 99 than see him trying to throw 103 miles an hour one time out of 88 pitches. What's the point?
KM in Norfolk for Barker. Well, I guess I'll just step aside. Will we see better number from the Jays staff now that they'll be playing home games in Buffalo and not the need?
I can only say what I was a part of when I played in Buffalo. In the summertime, ball flies line to line there. You know, they have to make quality pitches. Is that going to hide the people that shouldn't be pitching out of the bullpen? Probably not. So that's, you know, again, it's you get some guys back. Now, David Phelps not being around, that's really going to hurt this team. Getting Ryan Borucki back, you know, having Tim Mesa in positions that probably Tim Mesa shouldn't be in, that's not going to hide that part of the where your home games are at. You know, it gets back to, can you stay out of the middle of the plate? If you can do that, maybe, right? Look, they're just having people in key positions late in games that they probably shouldn't be putting guys in. And, you know, sometimes they don't have a choice.
Bob from Bowmanville, what is up?
How are you guys?
Good, thanks.
Good, good, good.
I was told I was allowed to ask a Yankee question here as a Yankee fan.
Yeah, go ahead.
Frustration level over Gary Sanchez. I mean, you know, lots of swing and miss. Sure, there's some power, not very good behind the plate, and more inconsistent than consistent as of late. You know, what do you guys see? What don't you see? Is it time? Do you think maybe it's time for New York to move on?
Yeah, I mean, Bark, we can both, and I know we've talked about Gary Sanchez. The problem with Gary Sanchez is there are a couple of aspects of his game that are really good. He's got a gun behind the plate.
Yeah.
He's got a cannon behind the plate.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of personal catchers, but when one of the best pitchers in the world is kind of sort of uncomfortable working with you, that, and you know, Greg Maddux had the same thing. There used to be this thing that Greg Maddux couldn't necessarily pitch to Javier Lopez, and Eddie Perez was kind of his personal catcher. Bark, I don't know how you feel about Gary Sanchez, but I think we've seen enough right now. Like, if I'm the Yankees and I've got to make a long-term commitment to him, I'm not making a long-term commitment to Gary Sanchez. I don't know how you feel, Bark.
Yeah, he's hitting 175 off the fastball. This is what I've seen. Every time I've seen him play, he don't like the elevated heater. He don't like velocity a lot. And the shift really hurts him.
Yes.
Those three things, because he is an offensive player first. The defensive part of it, look, you can massage it enough that if he's hitting 280 with 30 homers, who cares how much defensive woes he has. But offensively, velocity's really hurt him. This is what I've seen. Now, you could ask people that probably see him more every single day, but every time that I've seen him play, he don't like the elevated heater, he don't like velocity, and he don't like the shift. Those three things in 2021 make it really hard to be a really good offensive player. And, look, is it time to move on? I can't answer that question. The better question would be, do they have a better option?
Yeah, because Kyle Higashioka is a good defensive
player. He's a contact guy.
Yeah. But, no, it is a great question. And,
If you're Brian Cashman, what if you get rid of him? He goes to Kansas City and hits 55 homers.
And the thing you got to, you know.
That's the thing they're fighting with.
The thing you have to remember about Brian Cashman, too, is, you know, he's seen this before. You know, those great Yankees teams, one of the things they always did, and people always say, well, they spent money. Nah, you know what they did? You look at what those great Yankees teams are built around. It was built around Jeter, Pettit, Bernie Williams, Jorge Posada, guys that they identified early and guys they stayed with. I wrote an article about this a couple of years ago. You know, Bernie Williams. They also had Roberto Kelly. They had other center fielders. They made the right decision. They picked the right guy to stick with. Sterling Hitchcock was there. They decided that they liked Andy Pettit better than Sterling Hitchcock. You've got to make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to remember when Derek Jeter started out, he was horrible defending. He made 50 errors.
Yeah.
50 errors. In his first or second, I think it was his second year in the minors, and there was a lot of pressure in the Yankees to move him to center field.
He could make 50 errors with everybody that was around him. It's the same thing with Gary Sanchez, right? When everybody else is hitting in the Yankees
but
lineup.
My point is Brian Cashman has seen this firsthand, and I think this is the year they move off Gary Sanchez. I really do.
Yeah, maybe.
And
but it's that thing again. What if he goes to whoever, and maybe he'll go to a team in the American League East and hit 55 homers?
Hey, Jeff and Kevin, this is from Wolf in Toronto. Do you think Manoa stays in the big club if he has a rough outing? I was scratching my head when they sent Pearson down immediately after a bad start. I wonder if they would do the same for Manoa. Thanks.
It's a great question.
What do you do? What do you do if he has a rough outing?
What's the definition of a bad start?
Well, I mean, you know, let's say less than three innings or something like that. Three and a third. But here's the question. If he does that and you don't send him down, what's Nate Pearson thinking? Well, wait a minute.
Does it matter what Nate Pearson thinks?
But this is something that we talked about and people need to keep this in mind. This organization, and we've essentially had people come out and tell us this organization's creating a competition between Alec Manoa and Nate Pearson.
Yep.
They are.
Yep.
They absolutely
are. I think that has
creating
more to do with Nate than it does with Alec.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's got more to do with Nate than Alec. I'm with you 100%.
Uh-huh.
If it's me,
I would.
I wouldn't send him down.
Nope.
You see, you're going to have to see what you see. After I watched Nate Pearson in that game in Houston, I don't want to send him out there. I don't want him to start again after seeing that game.
it depends how Alek Manoah looks.
Yeah, his next start, I think, would be in Miami, the last game in Miami at home in Buffalo, or the first game against Houston, the Astros at home in Buffalo.
So the garbage can won't be available.
Nope.
Hey,
So would you give him another start, even if he had a bad one?
I mean, I would.
I would, too.
Okay, I got to go to this very quickly. We just got a couple of minutes left. Brian Anderson, friend of the show, Rays analyst, pointing out after Tyler Glasnow's last start that something was up with the Blue Jays and Tyler Glasnow. And it wasn't tipping pitches or stealing signs.
I think he said that.
What?
He did say that.
That it was tipping pitches?
And it was both.
And
he was doing one or the other.
Okay.
Or both.
But Tyler Glasnow kind of said, nah, we looked at the video. I wasn't tipping pitches. So you're getting this whole thing about something was going on. Dunedin Barker, you had a great answer for it.
Yeah, well, with the first four innings, he had three swing and misses on something spinning. The fifth inning, he had like five swing and misses on
so whatever they were doing, somebody put it away in the fifth inning.
Yeah, they forgot to do it in the fifth inning. But the point is, right, the first four innings, the spinner wasn't any good. That's the slider and the curveball. Mm-hmm. They were basically morphed together and looked the same, wasn't doing anything. The fifth inning, he wasn't doing that. The curveball, all of a sudden, he found the extension on that thing, and it started having the drop that it normally has. Look, the Blue Jays are hunting heater. He throws a heater, and nobody else can hit the breaking ball. I've been yelling and screaming this forever.
Yes, you
if
have.
Nobody can hit the spinner, why look for it? Look for the heater. It's straighter. You got a better chance of getting in an athletic position and getting the barrel out in front. Maybe the Blue Jays just have a good approach. You ever think of that? And for whatever reason, you weren't pitching very well. It's the excuse thing sometimes, just, you know.
This is one of the things that the Astros scandal has wrought. We had Eric Kratz on yesterday. He was talking about the Rockies. About the Rockies. Any major league player or pitcher can come out and say, you know what? There's something going on. They got a camera or something like this, where in the past we'd roll our eyes. Now we'd go, we would. Normally you'd look at this and go, pfft. But now you go, all right, well, I wonder. Like, I've never figured out how the whole camera thing, that how the time it takes you to go from there to here to there, how it works out. I never figured that out.
And most hitters don't want to know that anyway. Some do, but most don't.
Thanks so much for joining us. Who walked us off, Andrew? Pat walked us off. Pat in Paris, Ontario. You want to take us in a different direction, Pat? And I'm okay with that. Go ahead.
You know, for years now, with this strike box on the television, it's just been driving me crazy.
Oh, my friend.
Thank you. And I'm curious, does Major League Baseball and Major League Baseball's umpires, do they study the results of these to try and improve their calling and make the game better? Because if they're not, just get rid of the damn thing because I'm ready to pull my hair out.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Listen, thanks for the call, man. You have been, you're talking to the converter.
Yeah.